5-Hour Tea with caffeine from green tea leaves. It's delicious, energizing, and comes in 3 amazing flavors. With 0 sugar and 4 calories, it fits your life. With its compact size and portability, it goes where you go. To the campsite, the hiking trail, the beach, without weighing you down. 5-Hour Tea. Caffeine from green tea leaves. Release your natural side. From the makers of 5-Hour Energy. For more information, visit 5hourenergy.com.
Getting tired of your lunch options?
Change it up with Little Caesar's Hot and Ready Lunch Combo.
Wowee, the winds of change.
Get 4 slices of pepperoni deep, deep dish pizza, plus a 20-ounce drink, now for only $4. Goodbye.
Where are you going?
Little Caesar's, obviously.
Get the Little Caesar's Lunch Combo, now just $4, hot and ready 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. weekdays. Available at participating locations for a limited time, plus tax.
Pablo, if you're listening to this live stream, that pork's name is now Turbis.
Welcome, Star Wars fans. This is a special episode of Tatooine Sons with Jason Fry talking about The Last Jedi novelization and the revelations from Episode 9. I am BB Nate, and I am joined first by my brother, Samuel the Hutt. Cheers to Star Wars fans. Thanks for tuning in. And if you're not a Star Wars fan, then you definitely haven't read The Last Jedi novelization.
I don't know. Maybe they've read the novel. Maybe they just like Jason's writing and they want to read The Last Jedi.
That's fair. It can kind of be a little difficult to understand.
Mommy! I'm bored. Can we go to
the Bronx Zoo for the biggest, most realistic dinosaur safari ride in America?
Dad, I'm tired of the swing. Can we go to
the Bronx Zoo for the biggest, most realistic dinosaur safari ride in America?
There's no room to build a sandcastle. Can we go to
the Bronx Zoo for the biggest, most realistic dinosaur safari ride in America? Make your day prehistoric at the Bronx Zoo Dinosaur Safari.
And if you haven't seen
Star Wars, that's all right. But it's a great novel either way. So.
And of course, you can't ask Star Wars without bizarre father figures. So on that note, here's my dad, the Bowtie Jedi guy.
Well, we're really excited about Jason. I've been talking with Jason, or been interacting on Twitter for over a year now about The Last Jedi and novel, and even baseball a little bit. Although he's a Mets fan, so I'm not quite sure if you know, they've won World Series and the Rockies can't even hardly get to the playoffs, but. We're excited to have you on here. Thank you for joining us, Jason.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
This show has been such a blast, so I'm really happy to be here.
Well, that's pumped. Well, we are unabashed The Last Jedi evangelists. We loved this movie.
Yeah.
We loved the novelization. And so talking The Last Jedi with you is something that's really cool. So I want to start by kind of, what was it like for you, the process that you went through in writing this novel? Because, you know, it's not like back in the prequel trilogy or in the original trilogy when the books were being released simultaneously with the movie, or even in the original trilogy before. This was released months after. Explain kind of what happened with that and what was the process and the reason behind that.
I mean, the release after was interesting. That's the first time that it ever happened in Star Wars. And I will totally admit that my first reaction as an author was kind of, oh no, because, you know, as an author, you know, you want sales, and you want the idea of having a book like that land on the bestseller list. I was obviously pretty cool, so I was like, "Oh no!" Because, you know, I was worried that would cut into the audience, but it turned out to be really interesting. First of all, that didn't happen at all. I mean, the book hit number 2
right
on the list. It only got beat by Brad Meltzer.
If you're going to get beat by an author,
yeah,
he's
who I'm so mad at on some level. Hilariously, we wound up on a Twitter thread together like that same week.
That's
and
something.
I was nice because it wasn't his fault. first of all, it didn't hurt anything at all. But secondly, The timing actually turned out to be really nice because, you know, I loved Last Jedi too. Some fans didn't, which is fine. But I think for a lot of people, even who wound up loving it, you know, needed some time to sit with it. I mean, this, as Luke says, like, you know, this is not going to go the way you think. It's a difficult movie that you need some time to kind of sit with and process. And I feel like the novelization actually wound up being really perfectly timed by coming out in March. Like, people had some time to reflect on the story, et cetera. And I wound up hearing from a lot of people that the novelization kind of helped them do that, which is wonderful. That's, you know, what it should do. That's awesome. It's Ryan's story, and Ryan's really wonderful story that I loved. And so I felt like actually that timing let me help that process a little. So that was great.
That's cool. What was the collaboration process like with Ryan?
Yeah, so I started out, I went and I met with Ryan and Pablo and some folks at Lucasfilm out in July before the book came out at Skywalker Ranch, which was just an unbelievable pinch-me day on so many levels. And Ryan from the beginning was incredibly generous. He sat down, he walked me through character arcs, through the deleted scenes, why they'd been taken out, through other things like that. He said he gave me access to all the previous versions of the script and said, you know, anything in here you think will help you, you know, you go for it, which is just incredibly kind and trusting with his story. I mean, as not just the director, but the writer, too. Yeah. And I'm really, really grateful for that. He didn't have to do that. There are directors who wouldn't have done that, and it doesn't make them bad people. They just would have seen it differently, and he was just really giving about that. He also told me something that became not only my commandment for the novelization, but for everything I've written. He said, he talked about that, you know, The Last Jedi has a lot of fateful events and really weighty subjects happening in it, but he said that he always wanted to really quickly have, you know, light kind of Flash Gordon moments interspersed with those. And the way he described it was lift, not drag, which I thought was just a great commandment for any storyteller. I've made that, you know, kind of one of my North Stars in anything I write. Lift, not drag. So, yeah, I really can't say enough about Ryan and how, you know, how kind and how good he was to me in the process. And he said, you know, and as we parted ways, he gave me his email address. He was like, you know, if you need anything, if you're trying to figure anything out, like, email me, which I basically never did for two reasons. I mean, first of all, his script had a lot of where the characters were and what they were thinking, which was really, really helpful for what I was doing and the kind of thing that often isn't in scripts. And secondly, I was like, the man just finished making a Star Wars movie. I felt like he should, you know, be able to lie on a beach and not be, like, bothered by some needy writer. So I pretty much left him alone, but I, to this day, I remain grateful for all his help. It made it even much more fun than it was.
So what was the timing of when you started taking on the novelization as far as, like, when the movie had been released and things like that? Was it significantly before?
Yeah, it really has to be for publishing lead times. I was writing it that fall, turned it in. They did give me a screening in, I want to say, November, which was great. But we did some tweaks off that. We did a little more tweaking after the movie came out, just because it was so hard. I was taking notes when I saw it, but it's so hard to get things like fight scenes and choreography and things like that. It's so hard to get those right, and it's just hard to get them from, you know, even two viewings isn't going to do it for you. And the other thing was that, you know, the script had kept changing from what I was using, and so we wanted to at least make sure that we had, you know, kind of those essential iconic bits of dialogue down. Though, like, the Yoda one and like, Luke, time for the Jedi to end is not quite the same, which I still feel terrible about to this day. Actually, I think we got the Yoda one exact, but the Luke one, not quite. But so there was a little time after the movie's release, but not very much. We were really up against the very end, deadline-wise. Oh. But, yeah, some people online have this idea that, you know, they somehow think the book was written entirely after the movie came out, or that, you know, or that it was, or that anything we did was in reaction to how the movie was received. And no, I mean, that's just, even with a March pub date, that is literally impossible in publishing. You could not do that.
That's cool.
It just kind of goes to show that since you wrote it a lot, you wrote a lot of it based off the script, and people seem to like the novelization. A lot of people like the novelization better than the movie. They're basically just liking the movie. I mean, it's all the same, just ones in words for the most part.
You've hit something really interesting. There are folks, and look, to be clear, like, you know, not all of us like everything. And,
no.
You know, people can not be a fan of The Last Jedi.
Oh,
that's absolutely fine. Doesn't make them bad people or bad Star Wars fans or anything. That's absolutely fine. But one thing I have gotten that it's always kind of surprised me is it's not uncommon for people to come up to me and they say, like, eh, I wasn't really a fan of the movie. And they were like, but, you know, your novelization fixed it. And I always kind of think, you know, I didn't fix it. I think what actually happened there was, you know, that the novelization gave you a chance to reassess it and made it okay for you to change your mind a bit. But you know what? Honestly, that's great.
Yeah.
That's what, you know, for if it does that for some people like that, that's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, someone that may hear that and be like, hey, he's talking about me. Sorry. But, you know, I never say that to people, actually. And I let them process it as it is. But it actually...
It's just us.
It does make me happy that, you know, that it could play that role. But, no, the whole project was... It was, you know, it was dizzying. It was intense. It was a lot of things. But most of all, it was really a lot of fun. And I feel just very grateful and honored that I got to do that.
When I think about the novel, I think of two... one of them is just kind of a fun thing towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
But then the other, and we'll talk to that in a second, but the first thing that I think of always when I think of The Last Jedi novelization is that prologue. whose idea was that, and what was the purpose behind putting that in the novelization?
That was my idea. And there's an interesting story behind it, but I think it goes to a couple of motivations I had. The story is, it's actually an idea I'd been kicking around for a while, of a kind of quiet apocalypse of, you know, a kind of alternate universe for Luke Skywalker, etc. And I liked the story, but I hadn't written it, I just had it in mind, and I liked it, but I couldn't figure out why it would exist.
Right.
I just kind of put it aside, and then a couple things happened when I was looking at The Last Jedi. One was that I wanted to start with Luke for a very specific reason. Like, if the novelization of the film, you've got to be true to the film. And in the film, our main character, the character we really identify with in those scenes, is Rey.
Mm-hmm.
It is not Luke. Luke is a mystery that Rey is trying to solve.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to be true to that. And I knew that meant for most of the novelization, I could not be in Luke's head. He had to be a mystery to Rey. I could be in Rey's head, but not the other way around. And so I knew if I wanted to start with Luke, I had to go back in time before that dynamic was set up. So that was one thing, and it was also a chance to give us at least a little peek at what he'd been doing, which I certainly wanted, and I knew lots of other readers did.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And that was a little way to do that. And the other thing, which is really where it came together, is, you know, Lucas cut himself off from the Force. But there's no... The Force... I tried very hard to make the Force almost a character in its own right in the novelization. And there's no way the Force is going to just take that lying down.
Right.
And so I was like, the Force would be trying to get through to him and get him to realize, like, no, you've made a mistake. And, well, when are we most open and most suggestible? It's in sleep, in dreams. And so then it all came together. Like, here's the Force... you know, giving Luke this odd dream of a different timeline. But what it's really telling him is exactly the same as what we see in The Last Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you've cut yourself off, and things seem placid and safe here, but meanwhile, like, everything is going to ruin around you. So, it was really fun to do, and I was happy to have these sort of things come together. And you know, and hey, look, it also gave me a killer first line that I knew would get a lot of people talking, and that's always a good thing.
It hooks people fast.
Yeah, yeah.
So as a writer writing the novel, I know you've got to stay true to the film and you were, you know, following the script, but how much creative license do you have when writing a book, usually?
A fair amount, which again goes back to Ryan's generosity, and then Lucasfilm and Del Rey having a lot of help. Like, one thing we did, we made kind of basically a spreadsheet of all the scenes in the story, and then included scenes that we wanted to add. as well as, you know, figuring out some things that we could reserve for other adaptations of the story. But, you know, my editor, Elizabeth Schaefer, and I, one of the first things we did was sit down and talk about, like, what are scenes we would really want to see? And that's where we got, like, Han's funeral. We were right. Like, oh, gosh, we really want to see that. Yeah. But it was really a partnership throughout. Like, I mean, the other scene that people really like in the novelization is Leia and Chewie near the very end and having this sort of quiet moment when they've had all these losses. And, you know, if I can claim credit for the prologue, I claim almost no credit for that scene because it came at the very, very end. And it was Mike Siglain and Jen Heddle of Lucasfilm got me and Elizabeth on a conference call, and they were like, we want one more scene. And honestly, my reaction was, you've got to be kidding me. Like, I'm done. Like, I'm done. The production is screaming. Like, there's no way. And then they told me the scene they wanted.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, that's a great scene.
That's awesome.
And then I thought, please don't let me screw this up. No, but I mean, that's an example of the kind of teamwork that goes in. Like, that scene was entirely their idea, and they handed it over to me and trusted me to write it. And I'm so grateful that they came up with it, because it gave me a chance to not screw it up. And,
yeah.
And it's such a great scene.
It is a great
scene. All the credit to Jen and Mike. I can't claim any of
That's
it.
That's awesome. Go back to that prologue. A follow-up on that. I'm trying to remember, I know in the film, the third lesson is removed.
Oh, yeah.
And it's in the deleted scenes, but it's not. I'm trying to remember. Is it in the book? The third lesson. It is in the book.
Okay, good.
With that. That kind of ties back from what you're talking about, the Force trying to get through. It's about taking action. Prologue is about Luke needing to be proactive and go back and help. And he teaches that lesson to Rey at the in the novel, but doesn't want to actually execute that on his own.
He's struggling with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's but, oh, my God, there's so many things I love about the movie. Like, you know, the fact that we see him at the end of The Force Awakens. And he's in the robes. And he's in the robes because he's just tried to burn the library and he can't make himself do it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's this really fascinating, you know, moment of crisis with this character, you know, with that I personally, you know, have loved for 40 years. And it was just amazing to get to play a little part of telling that story.
One of the criticisms of The Last Jedi has always been that Luke is an inconsistent character going in The Last Jedi from the original trilogy. Mm-hmm. Things like the potentially trying to kill his nephew and giving up on the Force and his friends and secluding himself. What would you say to somebody, as a fan of Star Wars for 40 years, that wrote this character this way? What would you say to them about that?
It actually goes back to, I wrote a Luke book called Weapon of a Jedi a few years ago.
Yeah.
Which is sort of, I think, which was sort of my foundation for The Last Jedi novelization, because it forced me to engage with Luke as a character in a way I never had before and really try to understand him. But it also kind of sent me to Force boot camp for thinking about the Force and its connection to life and how it worked. And, you know, all that stuff I just carried straight into The Last Jedi, all the scenes on the island. I tried to make, you know, that connection really clear, as it is in Rey's wonderful epiphany about the nature of the Force. But, you know, what's interesting about that is when I was thinking about Luke, there was a wonderful note somebody had written on the Force.net user boards, actually, which was talking about Luke as a hero and said Luke is gentle. And that he's actually kind of the opposite of an action hero. He's gentle. He wins by throwing away his lightsaber.
Yeah.
He wins by refusing to fight. In fact, in A New Hope, he blows up the Death Star by letting go. And the one time he takes action, the one time he's most like a conventional action hero, is in Empire, where he's like, you know, thumbs his nose at his mentors and flies off to take action, and he gets his butt kicked.
Yeah.
And he barely survives. And, you know, so that's there. Luke has always been this really interesting hero doing what you don't expect.
Yeah.
And, you know, he also, I think something that's really fascinating in the original trilogy is, you know, he wins by basically rejecting Jedi teachings. Like, Obi-Wan and Yoda think that there's no chance of redeeming Anakin. He's more machine than man, and you know, you must confront Darth Vader. And it's actually, it ties in wonderfully with the prequels.
It's awesome.
Because they don't have families. They don't understand families. And Luke throws that all away, and he's determined that he can reach his father as his father, and he's right. So Luke has had this long, ongoing struggle with the Jedi and what it means, going all the way back to the stories George taught us. And, you know, I think, but, you know, getting back to The Last Jedi, I think what, you know, what some people disliked was that they saw, you know, this is kind of a deconstruction and tearing down of, you know, of heroism, etc. And it certainly is challenging. It does challenge us about how we think about it. But for me, at least, and, you know, if people don't feel this way, again, that's fine. But for me, at least, it winds up being a reaffirmation of heroism. Mm-hmm. And in Luke's mind, I mean, Luke says, you know, caustically to Rey, do you think I was going to go out with a laser sword and face down the entire First Order? And at the end, that's exactly what he does.
Right.
But in a passive manner. Yeah. You know, he doesn't actually do it, you know.
But the effect is the same.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
It's really awesome. Yeah. Now, the other thing that is at the end of the book, that there's a fun little piece for, is I was reading the last Jedi novelization at the time Solo came out.
Yeah.
And I was reading it and finishing it up, and I noticed there's those personalities within the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah.
And it hit me that one of those personalities has to be L3. So I reached out to you, and you confirmed that. Walk me through that process of them, like, letting you know about L3 and how that got into the book.
Yeah, I had read the Solo script, so I knew what was coming. And then one of the things I had a lot of fun with in The Last Jedi was trying to make the droids and make even the ships characters.
Yeah.
I mean, that you know, that goes back to Empire.
Right.
You know, I don't know where your ship learned to communicate. It is the most peculiar dialect. Yeah. 3PO's talking to the Falcon.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It was 1980. And, you know, so I had always thought that was a really cool idea. And then knowing what was coming in Solo, how could you not do it? And I knew it was a great Easter egg.
Oh, well, yeah.
That people a couple of months after the novelization would be like, hey, wait, was that? Yep, it was.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So, yeah, awesome. I mean, that's part of the fun of, you know, working with Story Group and being able to, I sometimes compare it to having a garden. Like, you plant seeds and then water them and wait, and then, you know, interesting stuff comes up. Yeah,
that's cool.
You had a question. We'll get your reaction about Episode 9, and now they've got this, the Rise of Skywalker and Palpatine coming back. What were your thoughts on everything that came out of that panel yesterday and how the story is continuing?
This is the first time in a long time where I do not know what's coming. I know nothing about Episode 9. I didn't know the title, don't know anything that happens in it. And it's kind of great. I mean, it is weirdly lonely knowing that stuff ahead of time because you don't have anybody to talk about it with. And that's the fun of stories, is talking them through just the way we've been doing.
Right.
So it was actually really fun to just be standing there with thousands of people.
Like everyone
else. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And just see it. And I don't know what anyone means, but oh my gosh, it looks cool.
I
can't wait
for
December. It sounds so amazing.
That's cool. Now, you had a question about something that came out of the trailer, The Emperor, and connection to The Last Jedi. Mm.
So, when you were writing The Last Jedi, did you know anything about The Emperor or him coming back?
So there was no Easter eggs or anything that was in, that they set you up with?
Nope.
Oh, that's cool.
The one thing I will say is that, you know, sometimes working with story groups, something that's really fun is they very rarely say, no, don't do that. And partially that's because I know my stuff. I know, you know, not to color outside certain lines.
Sure.
But occasionally, you know, occasionally it'll happen. And occasionally they'll, like, point you to something.
Okay.
I wrote a book with Cecil Castellucci, Moving Target, in which they had me add a little thing about, you know, growing up learning being a rebel soldier and, like, you know, learning from kind of people who did, men and women who did really hard things, you know, kind of in the dark to protect us, etc. And that was interesting, and that paid off with Rogue One. There's that,
right.
As they're getting ready to go, you have these hard-bitten rebels, and Cassian's like, we've all done things.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's what that was. That was really cool. So, you know, there wasn't a lot of steering in that, but, you know, Ask me again after episode 9, because maybe there are things that, you know, I didn't quite know about. But, it's just so much
Were
fun.
You as shocked
wait.
As everybody else when the oh, yeah. cackle happened?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and then, you know, Ian McDonald.
Oh, God.
I know.
That was so cool.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
That's cool. Well, we're going to let you go, but I think BB Nate had one last question that he wanted to ask about... You know what it is.
Certain thing. What's your stand on TurboSupporg?
Are you familiar with the story?
No. Tell me the story of TurboSupporg.
I'm going to tell you the story of TurboSupporg because Nate's...
exhausted.
Worn out today. So January of 2018, after The Last Jedi came out, got the invitation to go to Collider, a screening of The Last Jedi at IMAX headquarters.
Uh-huh.
And afterwards, a Q&A with Ryan Johnson. So this is fun. He doesn't have a position on this, but it'll be a fun story to tell. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the Q&A, Nate, 12 years old at the time, raises his hands and asks Ryan, what's the name of the porg on the Millennium Falcon, the main one? And Ryan kind of nervously giggles for a second and says, I don't know. What do you think his name is? To which BB Nate says,
Turbis.
All right. There you go.
So it was funny. It's named after our dog.
Yeah.
Our dog's name is Buster.
Yeah.
And so we flipped the syllables, which is a classic Star Wars move, right? Ewok, Wookiee, all that. But what's funny is then Ryan points at the camera and he says, okay, Pablo, if you're watching this live stream, that porg's name is now Turbis. And so we are pushing the campaign, hashtag make Turbis canon. Let's get him in a book. Let's get him in something. So if you ever get an opportunity to write of anything that has porgs in it, let them know that you want to name one of them Turbis so we can get him canonized.
I love it. If I get that chance, we'll run it up the flagpole and see what happens. That's fabulous.
Yeah, no, it's fun. Well, thank you, Jason, so much for joining us and taking some time to talk about The Last Jedi and a little bit about episode 9. We really appreciate it.
Oh, well, thank you all of you for having me out here during what has been just an amazing con, and really great to talk storytelling with you.
It's so much fun. And thanks, guys, for listening to this special episode. Check us out on all of our social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all that stuff. Go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/TatooineSons. All the way through May 4th, we've got a special offer out there for new members, so check that out. And I think that's pretty much it. You guys, anything else you want to say?
May the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you.
Oh, I hit the wrong button. Dang.
May the Force be with you, always.
This party's over.
I like that Wookiee.
Don't get technical with me.
Join, please.
Yep, yep.
Mommy, I'm bored. Can we go to
the Bronx Zoo for the biggest, most realistic dinosaur safari ride in America?
Dad, I'm tired of the swing. Can we go to
the Bronx Zoo for the biggest, most realistic dinosaur safari ride in America?
There's no room to build a sandcastle. Can we go to
the Bronx Zoo for the biggest, most realistic dinosaur safari ride in America? Make your day prehistoric at the Bronx Zoo Dinosaur Safari.
With the Capital One Saver Card, you earn 4% cash back on dining and entertainment.
Does that include dinner at that new French place?
Yep, 4% cash back there.
How about bowling with my friends?
Yeah, 4% cash back on that too.
Nice.
And that'll be a rewarding weekend. Because with the Capital One Saver Card, you earn 4% on dining and entertainment. So when you go out, you cash in. Capital One, what's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Capital One Bank, USANA.